Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 1, The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone, text number 32. Katamo pina venasyat panchanam purusham prati tasmat kenap yapayena manakrishne niveshayet. Katama, api, anyone, na, not, vena, the atheistic king vena, syat, would adopt, panchanam, of the five, previously mentioned, purusham, the supreme personality of Godhead, prati, in regard to. Tasmat, therefore. Kenapi, by any. Upayena, means. Manaha, the mind. Krishne, in Krishna. Niveshayat, one should fix. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Somehow or another, one must consider the form of Krishna very seriously. Then by one of the five different processes mentioned above, one can return home back to Godhead. Atheists like King Vena, however, being unable to think of Krishna's form in any of these five ways, cannot attain salvation. Therefore, one must somehow think of Krishna, whether in a friendly way or inimically. Purport. Impersonalists and atheists always try to circumvent the form of Krishna. Great politicians and philosophers of the modern age even try to banish Krishna from Bhagavad Gita. Consequently, for them, there is no salvation. But Krishna's enemies think, here is Krishna, my enemy, I have to kill him. They think of Krishna in his actual form, and thus they attain salvation. Devotees, therefore, who constantly think of Krishna's form are certainly liberated. The only business of the Mayavadi atheists is to try to make Krishna formless, and consequently, because of the severe offense at the lotus feet of Krishna, they cannot expect salvation. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says in this connection, Tena Shushupaladi Bina Pratikula Bhavan Dik Didishur Yena Iva Narakam Yatiti Bhavaha. Except for Shushupal, those who go against the regular principles cannot attain salvation and are surely destined for hellish life. The regular principle is that one must always think of Krishna, whether as a friend or an enemy. Obviously, the Srimad Bhagavatam is not instructing us in this two choices. If you like, you can think of Krishna as a friend, or if you like, you can think of him as your enemy. That's not the message of the Bhagavatam. This is explaining that it's better to think of him as an enemy than to be a Mayavadi. But there's a big difference between thinking of Krishna as a friend, favorably, anukulyena, and thinking of Krishna as an enemy. One, you go into Brahman, and as we've said before, Kaivalya Narakayate, Tridasha Akashapur Pushpayate. That for the devotee, going to Brahman is the worst thing that could happen. Better to go to hell, because at least in hell one can think about Krishna there. But if you go into Brahman, then there is little of no possibility of hearing anything about Krishna's glories there, and therefore it's extremely difficult to think about Krishna. Because after all, those who generally enter into Brahman, unless you're Gop Kumara, going through the gradual progression, going back to Godhead, then how did you wind up in Brahman in the first place? If you were hearing Krishna's glories, you probably wouldn't have gone to Brahman. But seemingly, if Gop Kumar in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he went to Brahman, but there he also saw Krishna's form. He didn't like to merge in Brahman. In Brahman, he also saw Krishna, because Krishna is everywhere. He's even in Brahman. Since he's the source of the effulgence, he's there also. Now, in order to attain Krishna, to think about Krishna favorably rather than unfavorably, there is a process, as I mentioned before. Because right now, we don't think about Krishna. And most people, when they think about Krishna, they've been associated with Mayavadis and materialists for so long that our general attitude towards thinking about Krishna is that he doesn't exist. In other words, to actually experience Krishna's existence means that one has to have extensive association with devotees and actually either bypass devotional service, be qualified to experience Krishna, or if one is not experiencing Krishna at the present, one has to purify one's heart. And what is that purification of heart? Vita raga vaya krodha manmaya mamupashitya bahava jnana tapasa puta madhvavam agata. Being free from attachment and fear and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attain transcendental love from me. It doesn't happen just automatically. Even our bodies may be here, but we have to make sure where our minds and our intelligence are. So, vita raga vaya krodha. So that we have certain, as Krishna said, tri vidam narakasya dam, dvaram nashitam atmanaha, kama krodha tata lobas, tasmet etam trayam tajet. We have three enemies. And the number one, coronavirus is not included within them. Sorry. Prahlad Maharaj said, actually, we have only one enemy. He said, the uncontrolled mind is our only enemy. And what does uncontrolled mind mean? It's under the influence of one of the six material types of consciousness. Lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. But, generally speaking, if one doesn't have lust or anger or greed, it's unlikely that one will be afflicted simultaneously also with envy, madness, and illusion. I guess it's possible, because the material world is based on envy. So even those who are free from lust, anger, and greed, they can still be envious of Krishna and still be deluded into thinking that they're a god, and be, which makes one moha, crazy. When the insignificant soul believes he's God, he must be crazy. A person who's 1/10,000th the size of Tapa Hara thinks he's everything, obviously he's quite bewildered or crazy. But Vita Raga Vayakrodha, there are three major types of consciousness that we have to get over or purify. The main disease is not pneumonia or whatever, or the flu. The main disease is Bhava Roga, the disease of consciousness. And in that disease of consciousness, we have the materialistic consciousness, that there's nothing beyond this material nature. Everything is here. It came, who knows where it came from, but this is all there is simply the material energy. So those are called materialists. The only possibility is to gratify the senses. You know that verse? We'll do a little Bhagavad Gita testing. From the 16th chapter, Bhagavad Gita begins with chintam. Chintama Pareyam Cha Pralayantam Upashitya Kama Paboga Paramam Etavam Iti Nischita Asya Pashishutarabhara Kama Krota Parayanaha Ihanti Kama Bogartam Anyayanartha Sanjayan. They believe to gratify the senses until the end of life is the prime necessity of human civilization. And therefore there can be no measurement for their anxieties. Being bound by hundreds and thousands of desires, by lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. And then it goes on. Idam adyamayav labva imam prapse manoritam idam astiyam apime vavishati panardhanam asomaya hatakshatror hanishe chapuranapi ishvarahamaham bogi siraham balavansuki adyo bijaravanasmi kanyosti sadrishomaya yakshe dashami modisha ityaganam vimohitaha. They say that so much wealth do I have today, and I'll gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine, and I'll get more and more in the future. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemy will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am surrounded by rich and aristocratic relatives. I shall perform some sacrifice. I shall give some charity. And according to Purushandra Maharaj's translation in his Gitamrita, then I'll go to the heavenly planets and I'll kiss the apsaras there. In this way, the demoniac deluded by ignorance. So this is the definition of materialist. The only thing that's there is material. Maybe there's some higher realms of spiritual experience that one may strive for sacrifice, whatever. But after all, the highest attainment is within this material world. So that's one thing. The belief that there's nothing beyond material existence, and therefore spiritual activity is taken as something is sentimental, a crutch. When you have nothing else you can do to turn to, then you go to the church and pray to some imaginary god that you think up to make you feel better. And therefore, you're a god, you have your god, I have my god, everyone has their god. Even my mother, who didn't really believe in God, she had her good fairies that were looking after her. You have to have something protecting you. And a little bit more advanced than that is, yes, there is a soul. I am a soul. But I'm impersonal soul. That is, even if I get out of the material concept of life and get into my spiritual body, I have no spiritual identity. The fearfulness of a personal spiritual identity. As I said before, the fear, I'll go back to the spiritual world and eternally I'll be doing something I don't like. They'll put me in the kitchen, in the spiritual kitchen, and eternally I just wash dishes. And there's nothing else I do. There's not even any prasadam. The prasadam is so good in the spiritual world that they don't leave anything for me to eat. So I'm washing dishes eternally. Everyone else is out dancing and playing with Krishna, and I'm washing dishes because my rasa is a dishwasher. That's my constitutional position. So people are afraid I'm going to get there. Or they hear the spiritual world, you can become a greater blade of grass. So I'm just there eternally as a blade of grass. And the only thing that happens is that people step on me eternally. Wait a second, don't abuse me. Ah, no, another time. You're always stepping on me eternally. This is hard for my ego, you know. I don't mind being a servant, but having been stepped on eternally, it's not fair. So the fear of the misunderstanding what spiritual life actually is, and therefore always being fearful of having some spiritual identity that one doesn't like. You look in the spiritual mirror and you say, oh my God, I got to look like that eternally. This is too much. Do they have any, maybe, plastic surgeons here or spiritual surgeons? I can change my appearance a little bit. And the third is that actually there's material nature doesn't really exist. It's just a product of our imagination. And the spiritual world is just a product of imagination. And I'm also a product of imagination. And therefore, at the end, I just merge into nothingness. I just disappear. Which is probably the most disturbing out of all. Of course, materialism is about the same. And spiritualism, the impersonalism, is not that much different from just merging and becoming zero, which is the philosophy of the Buddhists. You work hard trying to get rid of your karma, birth after birth, so you can finally disappear. Sounds exciting, doesn't it? Something to work for. So these are generally the conceptions that Krishna speaks about in the Bhagavad Gita as the main obstacles towards actually developing love for Krishna, are these mentalities. With a materialistic mentality, one is simply trying to survive. With the impersonalist philosophy, one is puffed up, thinking oneself to be God. And with the voidist philosophy, one is simply angry and frustrated all the time. That whatever I do, even if I'm the worst villain in history, or I'm the greatest saint, it makes no difference, because at the end we all disappear, and this no one can, you know. Therefore, I can get as many credit cards as I want, and spend as much as I want, and at the end of life I disappear and let the credit card agency follow me into the void. So one of them is Vita Raga, desire to become God, and Vita Raga Vaya, fearfulness of a spiritual identity, and ultimately the frustration, anger arising out of frustration and avoidedness. So these Vita Raga Vaya Krodha, Vita Raga, which is lust, ultimately it means lust, trying to lord it over the material energy, enjoy the material energy perpetually, birth after birth. And always being angry, the fact that we can't do it, and always being fearful in every verse we may merge into void and become nothing. And then frustration and fearfulness that actually maybe I'm doing the wrong thing, or maybe God will get me, or whatever. So these things accompany us birth after birth. Desire to enjoy the material nature, frustration over the fear of voidness, the uselessness of our activities, and ultimately fear that actually I may be a person, I'm being punished perpetually. So one has to get out of this, and the only way of getting free from this is by the process of sadhana bhakti, lo and behold. That the very process that we're doing is actually the best thing anyone could be doing. Now, if you did a survey in Ljubljana asking people what's the best occupation, it probably wouldn't be a monk in the Hare Krishna temple. You wouldn't get a very high rating. Because no one came to the material world, or practically no one, in order to become liberated from the material energy. Everyone came here, and because of forgetfulness, no one remembers that they've been here since time immemorial. If you could remember your birth after, you know, so many births, how you were a frog and you were singing and one day a snake came and swallowed you, you know, your voice would probably get choked up a little bit. If you remember so many births and deaths, so much fear and anxiety, so much frustration, so much useless endeavor that always wound up in the same thing, no gain. Then one would become completely frustrated, angry at God. Why did you create this world? You know, why don't you give me a chance? Why are you so greedy? Why do you have to own everything? Why don't you become a little bit more generous? Distribute your wealth to others. How many gopis do you really need? So one will become angry, even more angry at God, if one actually understood this situation. If you were not actually have the full picture. If you weren't practicing sadhana bhakti, if one doesn't actually get realization of who Krishna is and who we are and who everyone else is and what's going on here, then the only result is frustration, fear, and desire, rag, material desire. So only by following strictly, or at least trying to absorb one's consciousness in Krishna by the process of sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti is not just to teach us how to become a soldier in some kind of organization. Sadhana bhakti is meant for developing of character and pure consciousness. The perfection of sadhana is sadhya. And sadhya means bhava, feeling, love of God, love for Krishna, love for everyone and everything. The result should be love, not simply fear. If I don't do this, then someone will yell at me or criticize me or they'll think I'm a bad devotee or whatever. That's fear. And anger is that I'm doing so much, and I'm looking around at all these other lazy people. Why don't they help out also? Frustration. They don't recognize me, they don't honor me, and they don't do as much as me. And I need so many things for my service. I need so much recognition. We may not be getting a huge salary, but we expect some recognition, some appreciation, some service, something. So even in sadhana bhakti, these things appear, but not to the same external way that it may appear in the external, in the normal, so-called normal world, but they're still there and some, they manifest themselves in our consciousness. Unless we actually get a higher taste, unless we actually execute sadhana bhakti, following the process, just accepting, as I said before, that everything belongs to Krishna, and not being so anxious to get something, that Krishna will give us what we need. As a matter of fact, sometimes he gives us too much. So far, as I know, no devotee has died from starvation, but I know of many devotees who died from overeating. So Krishna will actually give us what we need. What's the first word of that? Anyas chintayanto mam ye jana paripasate te sham nitya vyuktanam yoga shemam vaham yaham. That to those who are constantly devoted, meditating upon my transcendental form, To them I carry what they lack and they preserve what they have. So there is an aspect, ananyas chintayanto mam, to also think about Krishna. If we don't think about Krishna, we'll be forced to think about something else. If we don't rely upon Krishna, then we won't necessarily get our, Krishna will not necessarily give us his full support. In any case, if we do, then Krishna will make sure at least we get what we want. As it says, there's enough for everyone's need, but there may not be enough for everyone's greed. As a matter of fact, yasya anugrahami karishe tadanashanai. When Krishna sees we have too much, and it's interfering with our spiritual advancement, then he takes it away. And therefore people, at least those who know about Krishna, are sometimes reluctant to become a devotee of Krishna, afraid that Krishna is going to take everything away. They'd rather become a devotee of the demigods, because the demigods give, but they usually don't take away. Because if you anger the demigods, they take everything away. But generally people don't consider that. Therefore, they rather worship Durga or Shiva, because Shiva, you offer a little bilba fruit, a little Ganges water, and he gives you a palace. And here we have our bee bag, we're rubbing it, hoping the genie will come up, and we're lucky to get prasadam every day. It doesn't work. Krishna, Krishna in the bag, kindly manifest. Therefore, by sadhana bhakti, by fixing the mind upon Krishna, what we get is much greater, because we get the experience of unlimited pleasure eternally, in full consciousness, in senses that can actually experience that unlimited pleasure, that qualified spiritual senses that have the capacity to do things which are far beyond our conception. Although we're very tiny, but still Krishna can give us the benedictions which are far beyond our conception. And sadhana bhakti means that we, as I keep on saying, we begin by hearing and then try to remember what we hear. Because it's essential. We're supposed to always remember Krishna and never forget him. So remembrance is actually a very important part of our process. It's not just, yeah, I can't even remember where I left my bead bag every day. I put it down somewhere and I spend half my day looking for it. No, we should develop our Krishna conscious memory so that, but what's the idea of memory? Is that we can actually see things in Krishna consciousness. Because unless we can see things in Krishna consciousness, for instance, seeing everything in relation to Krishna, then I'll be much more respectful to everything. If I see everything as a potential object of my enjoyment, of my possession, then I may be in the grabbing mood and trying to enjoy mood. But if I see everything as Krishna's energy, then I can be much more respectful to everyone and everything. One time, one devotee was kicking a mat, something like that, and Prabhupada said, you shouldn't do that because that mat is more sacred than your foot. So we may look at energy and we think, well, it's just, you know, it's just whatever it is. It's a towel. Prabhupada once, he once visited the Brahmachari Ashram in 61 Second Avenue, and he said, Brahmachari means dirty. Because we don't have so many Brahmacharis. But anyway, to neat, clean, organized, it's Krishna's energy. Or Tamal Krishna Maharaj, one time he held up a book, a Bhagavad Gita, and it was all frayed, and the pages were falling out, and he said, this is Krishna's Bhagavad Gita. And then he held up another book, and he said, this is perfectly immaculate with a cover, looked beautiful, like it was pristine and new. He said, this is my Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's Bhagavad Gita, Yamaraj, the Yamadutas were reading. They threw it away, and we got it. And our Bhagavad Gita is immaculate. It came out of Vaikuntha. So, respectfulness towards Krishna's energy, it comes out of seeing things in relationship to Krishna. Then we have to find out what to do with it. Simply to look around and admire everything as Krishna's energy is good, but we want to be not simply Shanta Bhaktas, we want to be Dasya Bhaktas. We have to find out from Krishna what he wants us to do with it. And that comes from Guru Sadhu and Shastra rather than from our imaginations. Then if we do that activity, but we do it in the spirit of trying to please Krishna, then the result is that Krishna will actually help us remember him in a devotional way, and we'll be able to experience him to different degrees, depending upon our sincerity and our purity of heart. We'll be able to experience Krishna, and that's called Krishna consciousness, which is what we're here for. So unless we remember, which is ultimate remembrance, that everything is Krishna's, and actually develop some awe and reverence towards everything and everyone that we're dealing with, at least that as a minimum, and then deal with it with care and attention according to proper authorization, with a proper attitude, devotional attitude. Unless we do that, then we don't get the full result of Krishna consciousness. We may sometimes remember Krishna, or we may come before Krishna and we enter in the wrong attitude. We look at the deities and either we complain to them, why aren't you helping me? Which is all right also, at least we believe that they're there. Or we look at them as if, you know, we look right through them. We're looking at the deities and wondering, you know, why am I spending so much time worshiping these deities? And look, they're looking at us and saying, my God, he's been here so long, he still can't understand anything. What's wrong with him? So we have to have, we're hearing so we can actually check and see if we have the proper consciousness. Not that, you know, let it all hang loose. I've been here so long, you know, don't bother me, don't discipline me, don't do anything to me. No, we have to become a little disciplined also. Which is why we associate with the devotees, we try to call each other Prabhu, so we actually take each other seriously. That's why you take initiation, you say Guru Maharaj, or whatever. So we become disciplined. It's not just a title, it's not just that we're giving people, we're supposed to be surrender and discipline, so that we can actually accept the philosophy as it is and apply it in our lives. First of all, if we don't have a vision, then it doesn't matter who you call Prabhu. It's just a title. The vision should be that I want to serve you, and that's my eternal position. And that's how I get Krishna's mercy and Krishna's devotees' mercy. So, hearing, trying to remember, especially how everything belongs to Krishna. We may forget everything else, but at least remember everything belongs to Krishna and must be used with care and attention in Krishna's service. When I was in New Brajamandala last year, and there was in New Brajamandala they have tours. So many of our temples, they have tours for financial support. They get different groups, and they have one group come, and what they do, their whole idea, they're a yoga group, is to become conscious. So everything they do with complete consciousness. To go from their room to the temple, which is like, you know, maybe 20 feet, it sometimes takes them an hour, because they're completely conscious of everything they're doing to get there. So that's not bad, but unfortunately they're not conscious of Krishna. They're just conscious of whatever they're conscious of. But we're trying to do things in consciousness of Krishna, and then the result of that, the conscious, simply becoming conscious, everything belongs to Krishna, and then as a result of that, doing what we're supposed to do in Krishna's service with great care and attention. That will actually make us more, that's when we're actually real conscious. Instead of just throwing the book across the room, you know, respect the book and put it down nicely. And then develop the attitude of service, of respect, of appreciation, and eventually that may come out as Krishna reveals himself as priti, priti, which is affection. But it has to start somewhere. Care is a good start, and of course with careful attention, and then also tesham sadatam yuktana bhajantam priti. Then appreciation will result in eventually priti or affection, and from affection rati comes, or bhava comes, actual prema, actual intensified ecstatic love. So if we want to follow the process, we have to understand it and then actually apply it within our lives. Something in our lives. Either respectfulness, because everything is Krishna's property, and then deal with things, something, deal with it attentively and carefully, and then develop an attitude of appreciation, non-criticalness is also there. Respectfulness, and eventually affection, and then gradually that will manifest as actual prema or love. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes.
Thank you. You mentioned, I really appreciated how you brought being aware of Krishna to being careful and attentive. But you also mentioned the spirit of trying to please Krishna and being favorable. And this, there's a lofty purpose here of being favorable. You also quoted the famous installation lecture by Srila Prabhupada, where he says, "What do I have to offer my feeling?" So I'm not going to be started crying a few days ago. And I also can't fail to notice that when you sing kirtan, you do it with a smile. So I think you are doing it, you're practicing this favorable service. But it's very elusive. It's very difficult to actually practice that spirit of trying to please Krishna or being favorable for Anushulya or intention. Would you kindly give some pointers about how this can be actually practiced? Because it's not an action, it's a feeling.
Yeah, as I mentioned, start with the most basic thing. Just examine our attitude. So our Krishna consciousness is always divided into two parts. Maybe another part, but the main parts are mind and intelligence. And the intelligence is supposed to guide the mind towards Krishna. As it says that, I always forget the first word, and then that, Asitasma tvam indriyanyado niyamniyam varatarshava patmanam prajahi yenam jnana vijnana nashanam indriyani mano buddhir asyadishtinam uch indriyani mano buddhir indriyani mano buddhir indriyama mano punak indriyani mano buddhir, is that the, no, indriyani puran yahur, that the working senses is superior to dull matter, mind is higher than the senses, intelligence is higher than the mind, and he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. Thus knowing oneself to be transcendental to intelligence, to material intelligence, minds, and senses, one should control the lower self by the higher, and thus by spiritual strength, control this, defeat this greatest enemy known as lust. Evam buddhe puram buddhva, samstabhyatmanam atmana jahi shatrum mahabaho kamarupam durasadam. So the secret is to capture some intelligence by hearing and then apply it. Apply it towards a favorable way towards Krishna. Somehow or another, use their intelligence to contact Krishna, to put the mind upon Krishna. And the result is, when the intelligence is, because intelligence is the next door neighbor of the soul, when the intelligence is brought towards Krishna, then the result is that the mind and the senses and everything else will follow. So examine where our see where our intelligence is. Whether our intelligence is actually in line with Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra appropriately. And if it's not, then examine the Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra humbly, to find out what we have to correct, what we have to do to bring it in line with Krishna, in Krishna consciousness. Then the result is, because the more we use our intelligence, Buddha Yoga in that way, it's not that our mood is necessarily, we're going to be ecstatic by ourselves. We can only become ecstatic and favorable and happy only when we're actually associating with Krishna and his devotees. We have to be in a favorable mood, of course. But it's in their association with them that we actually experience the ecstasy and the happiness and the love that they're emanating. And then our natural love will awaken also. But without using our intelligence to come in contact with them and their service, then we can't experience our own potential love and devotion. It's only in relationship to those who actually have love and devotion already. Specifically, those who are in line with Krishna and, in our case, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. Then these things like, with intelligence, we can learn care and attention, appreciation, following good, at least for us, following good, we can look around for good examples in our association and see how others are using their intelligence in Buddha Yoga, in devotional service, and appreciate what they're doing and try to follow them. And then Krishna will give us the intelligence how to do it also, if that's what we want. And if we look around, we see bad examples, and Krishna will also give us intelligence how to follow them wherever they're heading for too, which is probably out the door. Because nowadays you can't go out the door, so whatever. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Haribol.